I understand the arguments against a no-fly zone, but I think we should not take it off the table.
Biden seeks next move on Ukraine. It's Thursday, March 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online. You'll find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia's Ukraine diaspora speaks out. Troubling human rights in Afghanistan. Questions for a Supreme Court nominee. Myanmar low on power. Pinatas for refugees. It's all on today's VOA Asia. NATO leaders meet in Brussels later Thursday for an extraordinary summit on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As Henry Ridgewell reports from NATO headquarters, calls are growing for the West to take stronger military action in support of Ukraine.
The civilian toll of Russia's invasion grows by the day. If the killing continues, the West will have a moral obligation to get involved, says Fabrice Potier, a former head of policy planning at NATO.
We could prevent those massacres and those possible deaths if NATO were to be willing to actually take on a little bit more risk.
What could that risk involve? Potier says NATO could effectively blockade Russia.
I think we should control more access on the Baltic and the Black Seas, especially the Baltic is critical to Russian trade. 70% of Russia's trade go via the Baltic. Obviously, they will not let that happen easily, but I think we are geared, we have the plans, we have the capabilities to do so.
NATO should play Russia at its own game, says Potier.
We can do also much more in terms of basically cyber operations. And so the hybrid type warfare, which Putin has been associated with for some years, but where actually we also have assets. And in order to disrupt, actually, again, the Putin war machine.
U.S. President Joe Biden last week announced an additional $800 million in security assistance for Ukraine, including Stinger anti-aircraft systems and armed drones. Former U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Kurt Volker, also the U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations until 2019, says more weapons are needed.
More air defense systems, including those that operate at higher altitudes. More shore-to-ship systems to take out some of the Russian naval ships in the Black Sea. I do believe that the MiG-29s and other fighter aircraft should be provided. We're not quite there yet. I understand the arguments against a no-fly zone, but I think we should not take it off the table.
Volker says the supply of military equipment to Ukraine needs improved coordination.
And NATO could provide something of a clearinghouse function, and it could provide an assurance of delivery by creating a safe place for that in Poland and ensuring that it arrives successfully in Ukraine.
Western leaders fear any escalation could lead to direct confrontation between NATO and Russian forces and a conflict between nuclear-armed powers. But some argue NATO must take on more risk now or face a far greater threat if Russia succeeds in capturing Ukraine. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at NATO headquarters in Brussels.
There was heavy security Wednesday as rain hampered the search of a site in southwest China where a domestic airliner crashed Monday with 132 people on board. A number of people believed to be family or relatives of the passengers were seen at the entrance to Lu Village, some requesting access to the area where the wreckage was found. A China aviation official said late Tuesday that so far no survivors have been found after the Boeing 737 went down in South China's Guangxi-Zhuang Autonomous Region. Zhu Tao, head of the Aviation Safety Office of the Civil Aviation Administration of China, said no foreign nationals were on the flight. The aircraft involved in the accident was a Boeing 737-800, which was relatively young, delivered in June 2015. At the time of the accident, it had made nearly 9,000 flights with 18,239 hours in the air. Officials at a news conference also said that more than 2,000 people have joined the rescue operation at the site, with electricity, communication, and other support in place. China Eastern Airlines is actively cooperating with authorities to conduct investigations on the cause of the accident, according to the airline's officials. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. One of the doomed Chinese jetliner's black boxes has been discovered. Thailand aiming for endemic status as more travel restrictions lifted. New Zealand to scrap some controversial COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Energy shortages grip Japan after earthquake. Sri Lanka sends troops to fuel stations, aims to restructure debt. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily. Visit us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, and our website, that's voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Members of the Ukrainian community in Australia are holding daily protests to raise funds as they stand in solidarity with friends and relatives under attack by Russian forces. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Since the invasion, St. Andrew's Ukrainian Catholic Church in Sydney has become a beacon of prayer and pride. Most of the congregation have friends and family members living in Ukraine. The Reverend Simon Scooge, the Melbourne-born priest, says even in troubled times, forgiveness is vital.
Despite the darkness that is overshadowing us, we must always focus on the light. And this is where the church plays such an important role to help people, to guide them through these difficult times. I too feel rage. I too feel, you know, at times even hatred, I dare say, to those who are committing these things. But that's what they want us to feel.
Teresa Hoosey is a second-generation Australian-Ukrainian. Her grandparents migrated to Australia after World War II. Every day she's messaging relatives in Ukraine, sending her support.
Ukrainians have always been and will always be free, because that is who we are.
Australia has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, including President Vladimir Putin and military officials. Canberra has also spent $50 million on missiles and ammunition for Ukrainian forces. The Ukrainian community has also raised money to send aid. Oleksa Matyuk's parents moved to Australia when Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. His grandparents and cousins still live there. He welcomes Australia's help for the Ukrainian people.
The support that the Australian government is providing is very good to see, the fact that they're providing both military and humanitarian support. Originally, they were only considering humanitarian support, but I think that they can see that Ukrainians are fighting for themselves and that they're not going to collapse like Putin was expecting. And so to see that military support shows a sign of solidarity.
Australia said it would join the United States and Britain in banning imports of Russian oil. Australia isn't a major importer of Russian energy resources, but a spokesperson for Foreign Minister Maurice Payne said the additional sanction would collectively curtail Russia's revenue and ability to finance Russian President Vladimir Putin's unjustified war against Ukraine. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, the news on human rights in Afghanistan is not good. Happening now in Asia, a Chinese aviation official said Wednesday one of the two black box flight data recorders was found in severely damaged condition, 2 days after a China Eastern plane crashed in southern China with 132 people on board. It was unclear if the box would provide data. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's great to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. A report detailing troubling developments in Afghanistan since the takeover by the Taliban was submitted this month to the United Nations Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds hostilities and civilian casualties have sharply decreased since the Taliban took power in August. At the same time, however, it says the human rights situation for many Afghans has worsened. It says extrajudicial killings of members of the former government, including judges, lawyers, and particularly female legal professionals, continue apace. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet, who presented the report, says people perceived by the Taliban to be a threat, including human rights defenders and media workers, have been killed, arbitrarily detained, and forcibly disappeared. She says the Afghan people face a devastating humanitarian and economic crisis.
Following the Taliban's takeover, international sanctions that previously applied to the Taliban effectively became sanctions on the country's de facto governing authorities. The resulting liquidity crisis contributed to a full-scale economic crash.
Consequently, she says nearly 20 million people, half the Afghan population, suffer acute hunger. This, she says, has led to an increase in child labor, child marriage, and the sale of children. She says actions taken by de facto authorities have curtailed women's fundamental rights and freedoms.
Since August 2021, women have largely been excluded from the workforce, both as a result of the economic crisis and restrictions imposed by the de facto authorities. The closure of many women's protection shelters has left women at risk. Justice systems established to deal with causes of gender-based violence are largely non-functional.
Afghanistan's ambassador to the UN in Geneva says his country faces a multitude of crises, and the protection of the Afghan people must remain a priority for the international community. Nasir Ahmed Andisha is a holdover from the previous Afghan government. He continues to represent Afghanistan because the United Nations does not recognize the legitimacy of the Taliban government. In the past two decades, Andisha says much progress was achieved on women's rights, on freedom of speech and assembly, and in the general improvement of human rights.
However, the abandonment of Afghanistan and the takeover of the country on 15th of August by the Taliban has put Afghanistan on a downward trajectory of rapid reversal of rights and liberty.
Andisha urges the Council to remain fast in its support of the Afghan people, who in the face of all challenges are committed to retaining the rights and freedoms they previously had achieved. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia Facebook is the place where you can read and see more on this story.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia, Prok Sokhon, Special Envoy for the Association of Southeast Asian Nations and Foreign Affairs Minister for Cambodia, said he urged Myanmar's military leaders to show restraint during offensives and was told by the junta leader there would be no access to ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi while her trial was ongoing. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Continuing now with VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, is facing intense and partisan confirmation hearings this week. The first African-American female nominee was questioned Tuesday about her record as a public defender and how she would approach her role as a justice on the nation's highest court. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
The first day of questions for the U.S. Supreme Court's first African-American female nominee. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson promising U.S. senators she will be an impartial Supreme Court justice.
I am acutely aware that as a judge in our system, I have limited power. And I am trying in every case to stay in my lane.
The 51-year-old Jackson is also the first nominee in decades to have experience with criminal defense. She faced intense questioning from Republicans about when she represented detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, after the September 11th terrorist attacks.
But I don't think it's necessary to call the government a war criminal in pursuing charges against a terrorist. I just think that's too far.
But as Jackson explained, she was filling a key role in the American justice system that provides legal representation for all defendants.
This had never happened before, not only the attack, but also the use of executive authority to detain people in this way. All of our liberty is at stake if we don't get it right in terms of what the executive can do.
Democrats praised U.S. President Joe Biden's nominee for her wide-ranging experience in the law and the historic perspective she will bring to the court.
No one questions either your academic law school credentials or your service as clerk and as federal judge.
And anticipated critics' claims her record as a judge shows she has a bias against law enforcement.
What do you say to people who say you're soft on crime?
As someone who has had family members on patrol and in the line of fire, I care deeply about public safety. I know what it's like to have loved ones who go off to protect and to serve, and the fear of not knowing whether or not they're going to come home again because of crime in the community.
Jackson's nomination is expected to pass out of the committee without the support of any Republicans, who are concerned she will be an activist judge on social issues such as abortion rights and gun control.
Do the First Amendment free speech protections apply equally to conservative and liberal protesters?
Yes.
Do you believe the individual right to keep and bear arms is a fundamental right?
Senator, the Supreme Court has established that the individual right to keep and bear arms is a fundamental right.
The U.S. Senate could hold a full vote on her nomination as soon as next week. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, Japanese car manufacturer Honda unveiled a $124 million wind tunnel in central Ohio to test electric cars for aerodynamics and aeroacoustics. The tunnel can generate wind speeds of more than 305 kilometers per hour. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Myanmar power outages and expensive Chinese dresses are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
Clutching pails, tubs, and buckets, residents of Myanmar's bustling commercial capital, Yangon, queued for water as rolling power outages aggravate the economic misery sparked by last year's military coup. Last week, the junta announced the country's already patchy power supply would be further reduced for 7 days, blaming rising gas prices and attacks by anti-coup fighters on infrastructure. The increasing outages see homes and businesses in Yangon, home to some 7 million people, plunge regularly into darkness and leaving many unable to draw water to their homes. Resident of North Dagon Township, Ko Ang.
If there is an electricity blackout, we can use charcoal for cooking, but we can't live without water. Even if there is electricity, without water from the system, we can't cook anything.
Power outages are common in Myanmar thanks to a creaky and outdated electricity grid, with demand regularly outstripping supply during the sweltering summer months. Last July, Yangon's power supplier warned customers their electricity supplies could be disrupted if they continued refusing to pay their bills as part of a boycott that has hit junta coffers. Thousands of civil servants have walked out in protest against the regime, leaving schools, universities, and hospitals empty, and the State Administration Council, as the junta calls itself, struggling to issue bills or collect taxes. Zhou Zeguang surveys his Shanghai workshop and rows of workers, meticulously stitching high-collar Chinese dresses known as Shipao, which will sell for nearly $5,000. Co-founder of Hanart, Zhou Shiguang.
We Hanart focus on the high-end market because it has a higher difficulty. Our tailors dedicate maybe their whole lives making clothes to be able to make a high-quality Shipao.
The price tag also reflects enduring demand for the Shipao, known as Changsam in Hong Kong and overseas Chinese communities. Drawing on traditional design elements, the dress was popularized in 1920 Shanghai, its form-fitting cut capturing the glamour of that freewheeling pre-communist era and the desire of Chinese women to liberate themselves from traditionally subservient roles. The Shipao disappeared after the Communist Party, which considered it decadent and bourgeois, took power in 1949. The dress's comeback is due in part to producers like Zhou. A mass-produced Shipao, sometimes seen at weddings and other formal occasions, can be bought today for as little as 100 yuan or $16 US. But Zhou, 59, has found a market for higher-end designs among well-heeled Chinese fashionistas. Zhou previously dealt in lower-priced Shipao before founding Hanart in 1998 in partnership with Chu Hongsheng, a legendary Shipao designer who fitted Chinese film actresses and the wives and daughters of Shanghai mafia bosses. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
As the war unfolds in Ukraine, people in Asia and around the world are finding ways to turn what they do into help for Ukrainian refugees. The owner of Amazing Pinatas in Los Angeles has found a creative way. Originally from Nicaragua, Lorena Robleto tells VOA News reporter Veronica Villafane why she wants to help.
Colorful piñatas of every type adorn the front room of Amazing Piñatas. These hollow paper decorations are usually filled with candy. They're made for parties, meant to be hung off the ground and smashed open for candy to flow and people to enjoy. But these piñatas have a different purpose. They're being made to help the people of Ukraine. Owner Lorena Robleto and her team agreed to start this project after seeing the images of war from Ukraine.
Heavy emotions when I see that on the news and I see people living and staying in areas to protect themselves and their family. So it's just very sad to see that.
For Robleto, the devastation and pain of the war is personal.
It strikes because I come from Nicaragua and we went through a terrible war in the 1970s. And it touched me with that time when I lost a lot of my friends, my childhood friends, relatives. Financially, you know, we lost a lot.
The company's in-house artisans found a way to express their solidarity and support the people of Ukraine the best way they know how. Jose Sanchez creates handmade heart-shaped piñatas, paying close attention to the smallest details, while his wife, Lucy Banez, makes paper roses for special bouquets using the colors of the Ukrainian flag. Marketing manager Angela Sanchez came up with a fundraising campaign.
We are immigrants. We know how hard it is to be under attack. And we understand how they probably feel right now. So this is the main reason why we want to help.
Amazing Piñatas has promoted the campaign for peace and support for Ukraine on social media.
The phones is ringing all the time. We have orders online. We have to send many orders out of California, which is really good. I'm so proud that we create this and the people is responding right now.
The owner of Amazing Piñatas is working with a Ukrainian cultural center to donate 100% of the proceeds from these special sales to help the humanitarian effort in Ukraine. Robleto says that as global citizens, everyone has a social responsibility to help.
I think that it is bringing some satisfaction knowing that we're contributing to that, and that not only that, but we're also asking people to join us, and I think all together we can make a difference.
Veronica Villafaña, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Our time has run out for today's VOA Asia. Be sure to join us at this very same time tomorrow for another episode. In the meantime, join us online. You can like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You'll also find us on Instagram and YouTube. Of course, our website's available. That's voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jessica Stone. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.